Good afternoon, good morning, good evening. The number is 43, 0043. It's your All About Windows Phone Insight podcast. And we have with us me and Rafe.
Yes, I'm here too. It's 007 day. I'm really looking forward to seeing the film. I can sort of relive my previous... Oh no, wait, that was something else. Never mind.
Yeah, we don't talk about that. There we go. So, I'll be Philby, you be Blunt. How about that?
I think I'd rather be on the other side. Thank you very much.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, you can be Phil because I'm always the blunt one on the podcast. Welcome to the All About Windows Phone Insight podcast. You're probably listening to this after James Bond Day. If you are, hey, we hope you enjoyed the film. And if you didn't enjoy the film, well, you must be Timothy Dalton. We have got a jam-packed show. We are right in the middle of Microsoft's big gamble, the company, bottom line bets. Windows 8 has been announced and given out to the world. Surface is out there as well. Windows Phone 8 is coming up on Monday. Rafe and I are going to be there. David is currently squirreling away, hitting Windows 8 with a hammer to see what it does. And Steve is keeping Able Stuff over on All About Symbian. So, Rafe, it's just going to be you and me now.
It is indeed, and yes, it's Windows 8, Windows Phone Week. There's going to be an awful lot going on, but we thought we'd round up some of this week's news and going on, and we'll be doing the same next week, and I'm pretty sure we'll be able to squeeze in a couple of special edition podcasts and record them face-to-face for once.
Indeed, yes, I shall bring down the recording 8x10 studio with me. We'll rig that up in a secret location somewhere in London, just off the A40 next to King's Cross, three doors down from the Guardian. But other than that, let's start at the other end of the scale. Let's start with the Lumia 510. Nokia's, is it an evolution of the 610, would be that say, or is it just a continuation of the principle of getting Windows Phone into as many hands as possible?
I think it's a bit of both, really, because clearly this is like the 610 in that it's a so-called Tango device with the lower spec processor and the lower RAM, but it is continuing the kind of downward trend on price. The sort of estimated launch price, and as always before tax and subsidies, that's $199. That translates to about £125 or €150. Now, obviously, there are a few handsets around at the moment for less than that as retailers are kind of getting rid of Windows 7.5 stock or we've got special deals going on. But that's the cheapest price, launch price for a Windows phone device that we've ever seen. Indeed, compared to the 610, that came in at €189. It's sort of €39 less. So, you know, a 20% reduction, that's, you know, a pretty significant new benchmark. And in terms of the handset itself, it really is very much like the 610 with a few refinements. I'd say the design is maybe slightly simpler. It's kind of a cross between the 710 and the 610. It has kind of the shaping of the 710, but it's a little more elegant than that design. It's refined like the 610, doesn't have an LED flash with a camera, and it's only got 4 gigabytes of internal memory instead of 8 gigabytes. But on the plus side, it has a bigger screen than the 610. It's 4 inches as opposed to, I think, 3.7 inches. So in one sense, it's a cut down version of the 610. In other ways, it's actually in some ways better. So I think the important point here is it's that continuing mission to make, you know, the entry level Windows phone device as cheap as possible. And that's obviously the key to selling as many as possible.
I come back to this 4 gigabytes of storage, though, Rafe. Obviously, you know, you can run Windows Phone on that amount of internal storage. It leaves about 2.8 for the user. And you can download extra applications in there. You can put the Facebook applications and Twitters and so on in there. But you can't really do anything else with that. But, you know, by the time you put in 5 albums, you know, that's 300 meg. You know, that's like a sixth of what's in this. It's more than that. It's about, oh, whatever. Somebody do the math. It's far too early. But I just feel that's sort of crippling because a phone that's still going to be at least a year, probably 2 years. Why are they staying with 4 gig of storage? Why not, you know, how much more would jumping it up to 8 actually impact on? Because it would make for far better user experience 6 months, 1 year, and 18 months down the line when people are looking to buy their next handset.
I agree with you. It's difficult to understand. I mean, one assumes that Nokia have done their market research and got their calculator and done the sums, but it does seem very small. And actually, in the case of the Nokia device, it's in a way even worse because of the way that Nokia pre-installed quite a few applications. And, you know, it's got the Nokia Maps and Nokia Drive. Not that they're bad things, but they take up space as well. And so it looks like it'll have about 2.2 gigabytes free, you know, when it comes out the box. And as you say, that, you know, it doesn't leave a lot of space. So basically it means you're not going to be storing more than a couple of albums on it if you want space for then installing apps and, you know, the odd photo and things like that. I suppose with things like Nokia Music on it, that's fair enough, but it does feel quite limiting. I mean, some people have asked why not put a memory card slot in there. Well, partly that's not supported in 7.8, but also from a, you know, a technical point of view, putting in a memory card isn't actually as easy as people tend to think it is. It's relatively expensive because of the impact it has on the design, not so much the components itself, and obviously has to look on the visual identity and the kind of the strength, the structural integrity of the device itself. So more realistic is to put an extra 4 gigabytes of memory in there. I suppose it could be, you know, operator requirements as well. You know, they've asked for it to be as cheap as possible. And I mean, I can't imagine that it's taking more than a dollar or so off the build cost, maybe a little more than that with the volumes we're talking about, but certainly no more than, you know, maybe $5, something like that. And I think that's probably being very generous.
Yeah. You see, my issue with that argument, wonderful as it sounds and accurate as it sounds, is Nokia has done their market research. Do you remember the N97 that ran the Symbian OS? This was going to be the next best thing. This was going to be the communicator that ran at that point Series 60. And Nokia managed to saddle it with not enough RAM, which is an issue. I remember, you know, we reviewed it. We went, oh, you can just about, well, we reviewed it as All About Symbian. You could just about get by. Yeah, okay, it's a bit tricky. Sometimes you have to remember to close applications. But, you know, that just snowballed. So, you know, when we hear the phrase, oh, Nokia's done the market research, so they must know what they're doing. Well, my knee-jerk reaction is, yeah, but are they asking the right questions in that market research? And I just worry as a whole, the bill of materials to get down is not looking long term to try and keep it, because the N97 burned Nokia so much. I think that was where it really started to go wrong, because people lost trust in the company, and they need to build that up again. So does Windows Phone. I mean, let's be clear here. ZTE do 4 gigabyte devices. Samsung do 4 gigabyte devices. You know, this is not solely a Nokia issue. This is a Tango issue, and I can understand the lower in terms of processor speed and stuff, that's fine. But in terms of storage, you know, where you're looking at budget devices where people are not going to be constantly connected to the cloud, what questions are they asking in the market research?
It does become difficult. I mean, and honestly, I struggle to find an argument against that.
Yeah, but you manage it every week, though, don't you?
Indeed. But I think, as I say, it comes down to, you know, it is about the cost and it is about the requirements. And I should say that when you're talking about the bill of material cost, you have to appreciate that that then gets inflated by the time it reaches the consumer. And so it could make, let's say, a $10 cost. I actually don't think it is that much, but that can have an effect on which phone sells over another. And so when you're talking about the low cost devices, you know, even a very small amount can become quite critical. I think the only other sort of defense you can give it, as you kind of hinted at there, is the cloud thing. But as you say, on these lower cost devices, you're certainly unlikely to be on unlimited data. So you're going to be more reliant on Wi-Fi. And, you know, you're looking at some of the places where this is going to get ranged. There aren't going to be the prevalence of 3G networks in quite the same way that there are in other markets. We should say that this is planned to go first into China and India and then into other Asian and South American countries. It probably won't be available in Europe or the US. I mean, I still think this is a really interesting device, and Nokia have done a pretty good job on the design. It looks nice. It's going to be available in 5 colours. But it's inevitably going to get less attention than, you know, some of the higher end handsets, and people are going to look at this space. But on the other hand, the people buying this maybe not going to not be so worried. And are they going to be sideloading music? I think there'll be a tendency not to. And it's not like you haven't got a choice to go for a higher specification device if that's what you want to. And if you're just installing apps and then doing a bit of, you know, photography and then, you know, social networking, you know, the odd document, actually that is sufficient space. It's when you then start consuming media on it as well, and it's local media rather than streaming media. So I can sort of see this both ways, but I guess it's never going to keep people who are used to having a bigger internal memory store happy. The one thing I do think is quite interesting about this device is the kind of default for low end going up to 4 inches. And obviously this was something that's made quite a big deal of in the launch, having a bigger screen, being able to read things more easily on it. I think that's quite an interesting note for a low end device. Sort of 4 inches seems to be becoming the standard screen size.
And of course, as you start to get standard looking handsets in terms of size and things, designs all start to meld into each other, and it becomes more important the radius of the corner on your device, which will probably be the new battleground, even though Samsung have already done the first space.
That's right. And I mean, in all fairness, I think the design is a significant improvement over 710. I described it as a mix of the 710 and the 610. But, you know, for example, you've got the 3.5mm audio jack.
It's a 7610.
In the middle. Well, sort of. And then, you know, the USB. So it's obviously that we've had a bit more time to refine these later designs than their earlier ones. Because, frankly, the 710 was a bit of a dog. The 800 benefited from basically stealing the design from the N9. But if you look at everything that's come after that, well, Lumia 900 is sort of a bit of an exception. The rounded glass got missed somewhere because AT&T didn't quite like it in drop testing, or it wasn't quite refined enough. But the 610, the 820, 925, I think they're all great looking devices.
And if you wonder why we're giggling there at the 7610, do a Google image search on the 7610. That is how you patent a corner on a smartphone. Right, let's move on. Now we've talked history. Let's look forward. Everything, Everywhere, EE, the network in the UK, which will be bringing 4G to the general public for the first time, merger of Orange and T-Mobile, announced their pricing structures this week. And
Ewan wasn't a happy bunny.
Okay, look, let's be fair here. Okay, what they've essentially done is they've taken the pricing from 3G and kind of added £5 to each package to get 4G. Now, you don't have the option to fall back to 3G. The packages are, the highest one is £56 will give you 8 gigabytes of data for the month. And the lowest is £36 for 500 megabytes. Now, there's one nice caveat in there, and Tother Ewan from Mobile Industry Review pointed this one out. Calls and texts are all free. Essentially, they've become zero rated items. They are now part of, you get a phone, you will automatically get free calls and texts on it. That's a very interesting move from Everything Everywhere, and you know, leaves them less room to move. But 500 megabytes, Rafe, get your calculator out. How fast can 4G go?
I reckon you're going to get realistic speeds of maybe 7 to 10 megabits per second. I mean, okay. EE will tell you 10 to 20.
So 1 megabyte a second then?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. So in 1 minute, you can do how many megabytes?
You'll be able to do about 60. So we're talking about 8 minutes.
Yeah, 8 minutes of £36. And then, of course, if it runs out, you can wait until the next billing cycle or buy another package of data. Now, it doesn't give the prices for those additional bundles. I wonder if it will be the same again. That's... Okay, Rafe. Two choices here. One, because Everything Everywhere have 6 months exclusivity, they can get away with this as doing really high prices and use that to finance the launch of the network. Two, they don't have the 4G capacity, so we're limiting it through costs.
I think it's a bit of both, in all honesty. And if you look at the kind of data, I mean, you described it quite accurately as an extra fiver for the 4G data. The truth is, they're not very competitive on data full stop in the UK. If you look at the Orange and the T-Mobile prices, they're not that far off, a five at the low end. And actually, when you get to the high end, the more expensive tariffs, they're basically the same cost, and you get a 5 gigabyte. And I think there's an 8 gigabyte version as well. Power users are going to quite comfortably be able to manage 5 gigabytes. So I was looking at my data count, and I spend a lot of time on Wi-Fi, but even I was, up towards the 2 gigabyte mark, and I'm sure there are people listening to this that regularly manage more than that. Someone mentioned streaming HD movies, which is not that unrealistic. Yeah, you're going to use up your entire data tariff just to stream a movie or something like that. I feel it's basically they can get away with it because it's fast, it's 4G, they've got the exclusivity on it for the time being. But it does beg the question, Ewan, does that have an impact on Lumia 920 sales for Nokia? Have they done the right thing going exclusive with EE?
It does not beg the question. It will have an impact on sales of the 920 in the UK. Simple as that. We're not, again, it comes down to the interesting, the definition of exclusive. It could be, that they have an exclusive on the Nokia Lumia 920 LTE 4G version, and that Vodafone and O2 and 3 can have the 920 that only has 3G banding. Now, that, if that's the case, then it won't have a huge impact. But if EE is the only place in the UK where you can buy a 920 on contract, Clove, Expanses, all of the usual sources will find you one under the counter on a grey import. Don't worry about that. You will be able to get it unlocked. Then, right, I can see what Nokia are thinking. They launched the 800 on every network and it didn't do anything. And then they said they launched the 900 exclusively in ATT in America and it did quite well, according to Nokia. The problem is the UK is not the USA. You know, every single country is a different style of network, is a different type of consumer, has different market regulations. And the UK is probably one of the most cutthroat, capitalistic, free enterprise markets for handsets on networks. Okay, there's a little bit of a, you buy them off contract, you buy them SIM free, but the majority of it is every phone is on every network and the networks fight like dogs. You're not going to get that here. You know, Everything Everywhere's job now is just to get people using 4G. It's not to get people using the 920. It's not, you know, because they've got all the big handsets. They've got, you know, somebody walks in, okay, they want 4G. We have to assume that they're tech geeks, that they're elite, that they know everything about the devices. It's going to be presented, you know, with the HTC One XL, with the Galaxy S3, with the 920 LTE, which I see is captioned as the 920 LTE in Everything Everywhere's marketing. You know, they're going to look at these devices as power users, and they know that the data costs, and it's like, well, how much trust do I have that in a new network, in a new price structure with a new transmission for data mechanism, do I want to risk a new phone with a new operating system as well? I don't see Everything Everywhere swinging behind the 920 to really, really push it in the way that AT&T did with the 900 in America, or that you could do if you gave it as exclusive to another one. I think Nokia have made a serious tactical error here, not just in the UK, but in the idea that the 920 has to be exclusively on one network in every territory. I think that is wrong. That is, for Nokia's position, they are scrappy. They need volume. You know, the media wants to see big numbers from Nokia. And I do not see how this strategy will, by limiting their flagship's availability, will give them big numbers. It's not like there's a reality distortion field around them. It's not like everybody's just going to go, yeah, we know you said you'd never do that and you've done it now, but we're going to buy it anyway. You know, this is not an iPad mini where, yes, there might be fundamental problems about, well, how big are your hands to hold that from side to side? You know, that bit of flesh between your thumb and your fingers. Does everybody in Apple have that surgically cut away so they can hold an iPad mini in one hand and not grimace? Nokia does not have that illusion everywhere. This is, I'm going to go back to the N97 here, Rafe. The N97 sold because of Nokia's name and then everybody realized it was a dog. The 920 cannot sell in Nokia's name because the N97 was a dog. So why are they going on the, oh, we're exclusive. If you want to use our name, if you want to be special with us, you have to come and find us. The majority of the people are going to go, well, you know, I would try and find Louis Vuitton handbags. You know, I wouldn't go out of my way to try and find one in Primark. Nokia at the moment are not Louis Vuitton. Nokia are Primark. Primark works because they are everywhere on every high street in every country in the UK. The 920 is not going to be on every high street on every city in the UK.
Yeah, I have to sort of take an opposing view, but part of my heart goes, I absolutely agree with you on the exclusivity in the UK because it is such a relatively liberalised...
It's not just the UK, though,
mate.
We're talking about you, but it's not just the UK.
I think it makes sense in some markets, and I think you have to look at it on a market-by-market basis, and particularly where you haven't got many operators or you've got a dominant operator, it can make sense. And don't make any mistake, you know, exclusive arrangements can work when you're trying to sell something, especially when you're trying to establish a foothold. You know, the iPhone is a good example that, as you said, there is an additional factor there with the reality distortion field, but that, you know, kind of was only sort of there the first time round. And you know, if you can sign a good deal and you basically get someone to pay for some extra marketing or give yourself extra prominence versus just sitting in the corner of the store that, you know, you're ignored, then that's a good thing. Now, I think specifically for the UK market, I'm yet to be convinced. It does depend whether we see some other announcements about, as you say, is it going to be just the LTE version or something like that? And there is the 820 as well, of course, but I think a lot of people will, for obvious reasons, be looking for the 920. And as you said, it's going to be available SIM-free. So I think the true geeks who tend to buy all their phones SIM-free will probably be happy enough, and there will be grey imports available. How quickly that will be, I'm not entirely convinced, because I suspect if they go for the exclusive, they really will try and keep it that way. So the business part of me goes, I can see the sense in doing it, but until I get more information, there is a healthy dose of scepticism whether this was really the right thing to do.
See, I have a problem with this iPhone argument.
And what's that?
When the iPhone, or the iPhone 2, which was the first one, came out, it's like Star Wars film, isn't it? When it came out, Apple was not against the ropes. Apple was not expected to deliver a multi-million selling handset. They were not expected to have their first handset match up to what at that point would be the Nokia N95. You know, there wasn't a sense of expectation on Apple. It was like, what are you doing? How well is this going to go? And everybody had time. Nokia is not in that situation. Nokia is in a situation where we've been waiting for 2 years and this is it. We've been waiting for more than 2 years for Nokia to have a hit before they even switched to Windows Phone. They have to deliver. There is an expectation of delivery. There are yardsticks out there that they will consciously be measured against from day zero.
I think that's true, but they will have to take the strategy that they think will sell them the most handsets in each market.
And they've probably done market research on it.
Well, I was going to say, you know, they would have looked before signing exclusive arrangements, and they think they can sell more handsets this way. It's important sometimes not to look just through the eyes of the power user or kind of the geek user. This is for Nokia, that, you know, they can't just sell to that market and keep just that market happy. And yes, I think any of us would put our hands up and say, what we'd like is it to be ranged on every network, because we don't go into a store and listen to what the salesman says. We know what we want to buy before we ever get there. That doesn't really apply to most consumers. And so walking into a store and being recommended a handset, and if that's what, you know, this exclusive arrangement, if that's what it takes for people to walk into a, you know, T-Mobile, Orange store and be recommended the 920 as the first smartphone, maybe that's what it takes. Now, I don't actually necessarily think the exclusive arrangement will be that strong, but I can see where that thinking comes from. And, you know, you say Nokia have got this expectation around them. Well, in one sense, you know, they've gone down to almost zero, especially in the Western European markets. In the UK, you know, their smartphone sales were, you know, less than 1% of the market by share. So effectively, they are starting out from zero now. And, you know, there are a lot of people who will have affection for the name Nokia, but effectively it's in a completely unrelated product segment. You know, it's feature phones or the old style of smartphone. I mean, I think you can lay this on too strongly, of course, because the idea that there's this new set of smartphones isn't, you know, it's a bit of definition washing, if you will. But there is a certain argument to that. And just as, you know, Apple was famous for its iPods and for its computers, you know, that was, you know, unrelated to the phone. So, you know, actually, I think it is a bit like starting out from scratch, and they have got to establish their credentials. It's not quite that simple, because obviously it is a big name and all of that. But, you know, I think there is more than one side to this argument. So I'm just resistant of knee-jerk saying, ooh, it's a bad idea.
Okay, well, I'll put my cynical consumer hat on and go, £36 for 500 meg, where I get that for fiver on my Vodafone SIM card.
Yes, well, I do think the 4G pricing of data, that's going to be an interesting one to watch. Yes. And as always, in the UK market, probably the best value for money is going SIM-free, paying a small...
It's £21 a month for 500 meg. Yep, on everything, exactly. Everywhere. Right, let's move on. Applications, the lifeblood of the smartphone. Oh, technically, it should be free-flowing electrons going through the circuitry to actually power the things. But there you go. Let's go with the metaphor. Rafe.
Yes, this is the 120...
You spoiled Microsoft's announcement, didn't you? You naughty boy.
Well, yes, we did this last time for 100,000 apps, and we thought we'd do it again for 125,000 apps. This is our internal tracking service. And for people wondering, this is, you know, all information that's publicly available, and each application in the store has its unique ID, and that's what we use to count it as a unique app. It's probably worth saying that the occasional app does appear more than once, and that tends to be when it's in the manufacturer's sort of custom store. So for example, there's a Foursquare app in the Nokia collection that then appears also in the general marketplace, but that's only probably 30 or 40 apps, so out of 125,000, that's not too bad. I should say this 125,000 number is apps that have been published in the lifetime of the store. When it actually comes to ones that are still available, because some apps get withdrawn or unpublished for some reason, there's 113,170 available, and this was as of a few days ago. The actual rate that they're being added has slowed down a bit over the summer. It's sort of dropped to around 200 a day from about 300 a day earlier in the year. I wonder whether that's kind of a result of sort of resources or people waiting for Windows Phone 8, or sort of just a bit of a natural decline, because it was given a big boost with the kind of the arrival of the Nokia devices. And I wonder, I'm pretty sure this is going to pick up again based on sort of past experience. I think there'll be a big boost after Windows Phone 8, and of course there's also the commonality with Windows 8. A couple of other interesting milestones. There's actually now 100,000 apps available in the US marketplace live. As I was saying, some get withdrawn, but also not all apps are available in every marketplace. There's quite a few now that are available in just one marketplace, and they tend to be very local specific apps, you know, for a specific location, or maybe transport, or, you know, one language or something like that. I think that's actually a pretty encouraging sign if developers are creating local apps, and a lot of that has really come from Nokia doing a big push with its local teams. There's also 30,000 developers now have published an app in the marketplace. That's a pretty healthy increase from earlier in the year. Indeed, it looks like the number of developers is growing faster than the number of apps, which, you know, I think that should please Microsoft. Some other bits and pieces that are interesting in terms of the countries where you can get the most app. First is the USA, then it's the UK, Canada, Ireland, France, Australia, Hong Kong. No real surprise there. They're all the English-speaking ones, with Switzerland, India actually doing quite well coming in, and then it's Singapore, Germany, New Zealand. It tends to actually go with when those marketplaces opened up. There's a couple of tiers with some of the later ones like Iraq and Bahrain right down the bottom. The localized apps, as before, German, French and Spanish are the strongest languages, but China is growing pretty quickly. Just to come back to what I was saying about the apps being added, there was quite a significant fall sort of in July and August, sort of dog days of summer, I guess. It has picked up again in September. It looks like it's going to do the same in October as well. So it's sort of heading towards the 7,000 mark for September and October. The other thing we like to talk about, because we do recognise that numbers aren't really everything, you know, it's quality, not quantity. We try and measure quality by looking at the number of times an application has been rated, on the basis that people tend to only bother, you know, rating applications if they're good. I mean, they also do it if it's very bad. So it's not a perfect metric, but it's also good for user engagement. And we look at the number of apps that have been rated 5 or more times. And in the UK, that's steady at 7.8%. But in the US, it's popped up a couple of percents now at 14%. That's probably not altogether surprising if the number of users are increasing. But that's, I think, a pretty encouraging sign. And it's, you know, every day we get another app being added that's a branded app or something that's well known. So it's still moving in the right direction. There haven't really been any changes in the category breakdowns. It's still, you know, all the same. In terms of the kind of licensing, 69% of apps are free. The paid apps at 22% and paid with trial at 10%. Slight increase in free apps from earlier in the year. The one other bit of interesting information that we did in the post on this, which you can find on the site, of course, is that Windows Phone has actually reached its 125,000 milestone, slightly quicker than Android, but not as fast as iOS. It has actually narrowed the gap between Android and Windows Phone, because between 100,000 and 200,000 apps, Android accelerated very significantly. And if Windows Phone doesn't do the same, it will fall behind Android. And this kind of, we do this comparison because obviously iOS and Android have way more apps now, you know, 600,000 plus, but at the similar time in their life cycles, you know, Windows Phone is actually not that dissimilar to them. So I think that's probably a fairer comparison. And it shows that, you know, for its relative position, Windows Phone isn't doing too badly at all.
Compared to BlackBerry?
BlackBerry hasn't reached 125,000 apps. It does depend exactly how you count these, with BlackBerry 10 coming up and obviously Playbook apps. But yes, RIM haven't really shouted about the apps. The Nokia Store is similar to Android, but that does include apps from a variety of platforms, Symbian, MIMO, and Series 40, so it's probably not an entirely fair comparison. I think the big three are going to get compared as iOS, Windows Phone, and Android. And, you know, so that relative comparison probably will surprise some people who would assume Android was the fastest growing, but they probably tend to forget that Android was pretty slow off the mark. iOS was fast off the mark, and arguably that was because actually the market or the App Store didn't come in until the second generation of the devices, so there was kind of a installed user base there to kick things off straight away that was a year old. So in one sense, you could, you know, add 12 months onto the Apple numbers. I think that would be fixing the numbers a little bit too much, but it's not ever these numbers as clear cut as you like. But as I say, all of these are available on the site if you want to go and have a look at them. We've done a lot of work in sort of breaking them down into interesting segments, and you can see the growth rate. But I guess the conclusion is, you know, increasing the growth of the catalogue size, which is a good thing. It has slowed down a bit, so it'll be worth watching what happens after Windows Phone 8 comes out. And it's, you know, relative terms, it's doing well, but there is still this app gap, and that's not going to go away. And, you know, it's not just about quality apps either. It's about very specific apps. You know, people, as we've said before on this podcast, they look for BBC iPlayer or Instagram or Angry Birds. Now, some of those we're pretty sure are going to be fixed with Windows Phone 8. I suspect we might see some announcements in the next few days around some of those app titles, but there's always going to be a couple of apps that aren't there. So I actually think, you know, again, Microsoft needs to continue the strategy along with its hardware partners of encouraging, you know, these key apps onto the platform, and also think about how it can create its own, you know, kind of unique apps. That's harder to do, but that's what the kind of app startup, you know, growth ventures are trying to do. You know, Nokia have their own one over in one of the universities there, and Microsoft are doing similar things, and Nokia's just opened up an innovation center in China. All of those aimed at kind of getting unique, exclusive apps really onto the Windows Phone platform. So it's an ongoing story, but hopefully you've been able to get the latest details from allaboutwindowsphone.com.
And talking of apps, Rafe, we have an All About Windows Phone app on Windows Phone.
We do.
But there's more.
There is. Ooh, isn't this exciting? Yes.
Yeah, because I just read that from the script. I don't know what's coming up next.
Just yesterday, we actually made available a Windows 8 app. So for those of you that are busily installing Windows 8, which has literally been released as we record this, you'll be able to install a Windows 8 Metro app, except I shouldn't really be calling it Metro. I should be calling it a Windows Store app. This will work on both Windows 8 and Windows RT, and it will give you access to all the latest content on the site. It's been done in kind of the Windows 8 style, so, you know, with the horizontal scrolling. You get into the stories, you can view the images from that, you can follow all the links, read the content. You can also get at our podcast, makes it really easy to consume the podcast. So maybe you're even listening to it right now in that app, and just go to the podcast tab, press the play button, and away things go. It's got the normal links, so if you want to get to install applications, they'll all work, as well as internal links within the app to go to different stories, plus go onto the website and things like that. We'd love to hear some feedback from you about it. If you like it, please review it in the Windows 8 store. It should be available globally, and you'll find it if you type in AAWP to the search, but you'll also find it in the news section. And with about 9,000 apps in the Windows 8 store, it's one of not very many, so we're very proud to have that. And a big thanks has to go out to the developer, Jeff Webber Cross, for that. So if you're listening to this, Jeff, thank you very much for all your hard work on that. I'm sure there's going to be lots of people who are very happy to be able to get it on their PC, their tablet, and their laptop, as well as the phone. But yes, don't forget, we do have the phone app as well. By the same token, you can search for that using AAWP in the marketplace. So that's very exciting news. We'll talk a bit more about that and Windows 8 in the next podcast.
Yeah, I know that David is away, as we said at the top of the podcast, with the laptop, with the installs, going through Windows 8 with a fine-tooth comb and the implications that will have on Windows Phone as well. And we'll probably hear more about that next week as well. It wouldn't surprise me, Rafe, if with the Windows Phone 8, we'll see a little bit more integration, things like the smart glass concept coming through in other ways as well.
yes, we're going to hear an awful lot about that. I mean, I've said before, Windows Phone 8 and Windows 8, they've never been more integrated. It's not just about the kind of the shared design language that you're getting with all the tiles and the typography. It's all about the services, things like Xbox Smart Glasses, you said, SkyDrive, Office 2013, Xbox Music, Xbox Video. And I suspect we'll hear more about that on Monday and in the weeks ahead. And certainly we're going to be talking quite a bit about it in future podcasts.
Right then, also looking at the script, Rafe, we appear to have created a brand new section of the podcast in the last week or two. Listener questions.
Yes, that's right. I'm going to apologise to Paul first, because we said we'd get to hit the second part of his question in the next podcast. We're not going to do that, sorry, Paul, but we will answer it in a future podcast when we've got all the team on hand to answer what features we'd like to see come over from iOS and Android. So there's a spoiler for a future podcast.
Right then, let's go with, I've got this here, Stephen Forbes. Let's take his question first of all. Is there room for a QWERTY physical keyboard Windows Phone device?
Well, this is a good question. Now, I'm a big fan of QWERTY devices, so I'm going to let Ewan answer this one first, because I suspect we might disagree here.
Is there room? Now, this is an interesting one. Initially, no. In the first wave of devices, no. There needs to be a consistent message, and I think if you have either a clamshell or a changer or a transformer device, it would muddy the marketing message. But when it comes around to, I don't know, whatever 3GSM is calling itself nowadays in February, Mobile World Congress or whatever, I would like to see. And the reason is the Nokia E7, which is still kicking around. It's the Symbian phone that I have that has one of my SIM cards in there, which was, quite frankly, a lovely device. When it was closed, it just felt like a regular slab touchscreen. But the mechanism, and again, styling, very reminiscent of the N9 and therefore the N800. And the keyboard that came out was wonderful. It was a brilliant keyboard, and it does work. Now, the issue is it's not whether the hardware is good or the marketing is good, but it's whether Windows Phone is ready for it. Now, there has been a QWERTY device in Windows Phone 7 before, but Windows Phone 7 is an OS, wasn't quite ready to run everything in landscape, and this is the key. I think for a QWERTY device, either it has to run all in landscape, or you end up with that really weird thing that Dell had, where you kind of slide up and it just looks like an overblown Nokia banana phone from the Matrix. There is a place, but it is going to be a small percentage of the number of devices sold, which means it doesn't actually make any economic sense until you're selling lots and lots of devices. Windows Phone needs to pass the 10 million unit mark on Windows Phone 8 before I think we'll see a viable QWERTY device.
Ewan stole my thunder a bit there, but yes, I agree. I mean, the Dell Venue Pro was the QWERTY device you were referring to there, and HTC had various kind of sliders in their first set of devices, and none of those work well because of that landscape support. I would hope that's something that's going to be improved in Windows Phone 8. Doesn't seem to be a lot of evidence for it yet, because what I would really like to see is a old-style kind of communicator device from Nokia, you know, upgraded. There was actually the Nokia 950, which was kind of a prototype for the Migo devices. And I actually would rather like to see a Windows Phone device running something like that. And as you said, it's kind of a clamshell, but it's actually with a slide-up device, and you had something similar with the Nokia E7 as well. And I think that would make, you know, a great combination. But yes, there is this issue around the software support. You know, it is a partly chicken and egg thing, though. You know, you need to have a variety of devices if you're going to grow the market, rather than just one. At least I think so, for when you're trying to do a broad platform rather than something specific like iPhone. And given that Windows Phone is, you know, big enterprise push, you know, that's got the security coming in this time around, you know, BitLocker as well as a secure boot and lots more enterprise applications. I mean, Windows Phone 8 in terms of, you know, fitness for enterprise is really right up there, and it's certified for a lot of things. So a lot of the, you know, people who are using BlackBerry devices, basically because they have no choice at the moment, because legal requirements mean they need a secure device, which is something Android and iPhone don't really provide in the same way, at least not yet. There are some third-party workarounds for this, but as I say, it's a complex area. So let's not get into too much detail there. But if you really want to have strong enterprise devices, I think you still need a QWERTY device. Now, I'll be the first to say that there's a very strong on-screen keyboard, and they have improved markedly in the last few years, to the extent that I think most consumers probably don't need one. But you know, there's always going to be demand out there. So I would actually like to see it happen sooner rather than later. But I think Ewan's probably right in that the priority is to get kind of the default form factor out there and then QWERTY come along later. And I would hope it will come sooner rather than later, but I suspect we may have to wait a bit longer. I know, you know, when Nokia was looking at Windows Phone, I'm sure QWERTY was one of the kind of device form factors they considered. But for some of the reasons we've talked about, it probably didn't make it. There's definitely still room for it. And I actually think it's something that's going to be necessary if you're going to, you know, dredge up the last parts of BlackBerry, which I'm sure Microsoft and Nokia would like to, you know, they basically see that as a big opportunity. And, you know, BlackBerry 10's coming along. Actually, the perfect time to announce a QWERTY device would maybe be as those BlackBerry 10 devices come out, because people will be thinking about making the switch over, and, you know, going from, you know, the current BlackBerry to BlackBerry 10 will be a big step. And if, you know, they look around and see a familiar looking device running something else, and oh, it's Windows. Oh, I've heard about Windows 8 as well. I think there's a real potential there. So I think it's a really interesting question that we're all kind of sounding a bit like QWERTY fans here. But yes, Stephen, we agree with you. Definitely room for a QWERTY Windows Phone device.
Surely the best time to announce Windows Phone 8 QWERTY support is when BlackBerry 10 crashes and burns and RIM goes, yeah, we're using Windows Phone now.
Well, there is that too.
Because, yeah, I do love the phrase BlackBerry 10 is coming along. Yes, that's right, Rafe. BlackBerry 10 is coming along. Just the same as Duke Nukem once a time is coming along. Right, let's do for another question. Quite an involved one here from MyE2808. Thank you for letting us know your PIN number as well. Steve Ballmer has been talking openly about Microsoft integrating the best software with the best hardware, which is the same PR strategy that Apple has been saying for years. This does sound like Microsoft want to become more like Apple in the consumer market. When this happens, what would make a consumer buy a Lumia device over a Microsoft Surface phone? And as a smartphone manufacturer, where does this leave Nokia? Okay, so we got, what, two questions and an observation in there, right? Let's take the observation first. Microsoft looking to become more like Apple in the consumer market.
Yes, they are. You know, you look at Surface, and Steve Ballmer's on record as saying there's more hardware to come. Does that include a Surface phone? I think Microsoft would be very stupid if they weren't at least considering the option, you know, as a fallback strategy, as an alternative strategy. And the thing is, with a phone, it takes a couple of years to put it together. I mean, it's not just about, you know, writing the specs and sending it off to the factory and having it arrive a few months later. If you're going to do it, you know, really carefully, it is a long-term project. And actually, phones are more complicated than tablets, so I would imagine it would take them longer to put together than the Surface tablet. So they would have had to start thinking about it. I would have thought anything up to, you know, 6 months to a year ago, if they were going to deliver sometime next year. So yes, they are thinking about it. Is it the right strategy for Microsoft? To, you know, it's a really interesting one, which I don't think we can get into too much detail here, because obviously the problem with Microsoft is that, you know, they have a lot of existing manufacturing partners and they don't want to annoy them too much. And there's been some of that over Surface, and it's kind of been defended against by saying Microsoft wanted to show the possibilities and what could be done with Surface, kind of set a new benchmark. And it does seem most people have accepted it. And I can sort of see the strength of the argument. I mean, but basically what it comes down to is Apple have enjoyed incredible growth over the last few years, and they've done that by taking this integrated approach. And so, of course, Microsoft needs to consider it. Will they take exactly the same model? I very much doubt it. I think they will continue to need their manufacturing partners, but it's also quite a dangerous time for them, simply because, as I say, you risk annoying your partners. And you know, you look back in the history of ecosystems, particularly in mobile, and it's very difficult to come up with an example of a company that's, you know, licensed their operating system and manufacturer's devices successfully at the same time. You look at someone like Palm, for example. They tried to take that road. It didn't really work. Nokia with Symbian is probably the best example of that. They were never really able to convince
You mean Scion with Symbian?
Well, yes, I should say Scion with Symbian.
Which I think is the point, yes.
Well, there is that. But and then sort of Symbian and Nokia, you know, Nokia became the dominant force and no one was terribly interested. They tried to do the same thing with Mego, incidentally, and that didn't really work either. And there have been other examples of that as well. You know, Apple itself, when it was trying to license its desktop operating system, you know, so it's easy to see why there's so much skepticism and so much talk around this.
And I think the other thing to point out here is if you look at Asus, if you look at HP, if you look at the range of laptops and tablets that they're coming out with now, none of them are giving an actual, this is Windows RT, this is what Windows and Microsoft could do with a tablet. If Microsoft hadn't made the Surface, there wouldn't be a Surface equivalent from its manufacturing partners. So in a sense, the Surface is also, to my mind, this is what our operating system can do. It's a flag as much as a piece of hardware.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think, you know, Microsoft doing hardware is a lot more defensible in the kind of the tablet context than it is in the phone context, where they have, I would argue, stronger partners, or rather it's a different type of market. But, you know, the evidence about Surface Phone is all rumours and speculation at the moment. As I said, I think they'd be sensible to do so. Whether that actually means releasing it in a big scale or in a big way, you know, that's kind of a different question. And we'll kind of have to wait and see on that. But I guess we should answer the second part of this question is...
I didn't want to break it up, otherwise we would have forgotten the third part with your stuff. He says that, holding his Zune HD, which is still, you know, a really good basis for a Metro. You know, it still has the Metro user interface because it's called Metro One here. Right, what's the question? When this happens... Okay, so we now have to make the jump that there will be a Surface Phone. Yeah, I think there will be a Surface Phone. The question is whether Microsoft will release it to the public or not. I suspect that they do have internal test beds going. When this happens...
They definitely have internal test beds already. I mean, they've been using Nokia Protos for internal testing, but I'm sure they'll want their own ones. And it's not just will they release it or won't they release it? It's how do they release it? What forms does it take? Is it just a high-end device and all of that? But, you know, leaving that aside, some of that would kind of have to answer the next question. But, yeah, sorry, Jung.
Yeah, so the next question, part of the question was, when this happens, what would make a consumer buy a Lumia device over a Microsoft Surface phone? So I'll take this one first, Rafe. Okay? Steal your thunder again. And I'll answer that question with a question. Why would somebody buy the Galaxy S3 over the Galaxy Nexus? Or the Xperia S over any alleged Sony Nexus device you get? Why would somebody buy... Well, it kind of, you know, why did people buy the Nexus tablets and some people buy the Galaxy Tab tablets? It's because when you have lots of competent partners doing manufacturers, and that includes the original manufacturer as well, you have everybody striving to be better, striving to do slightly better than everybody else in the collective, and everybody drives itself forward. Microsoft having a Surface phone drives HTC, Nokia, Samsung, Huawei, ZTE, Acer, everybody else who wants to join in, to do better. You know, when Nokia releases the 920, all the other partners want to do better. When the selling of the 80S is taken into the labs and looked at, it makes everybody else want to do better. Now, as a consumer, what's the best way to get the best phone? Is it have one phone from one company that said, this is the phone you will buy, Apple? Or do you have a selection of phones and you choose the best one for you? This is why I think that people would still buy Lumias over Surfaces. It's why some people would buy HTCs over Surfaces. It's why some people would buy Surfaces over ZTE. Because you have a wide pool of expertise, all of them lifting each other technologically, and there will be one in there that fits you. Yeah. And that's far easier to find than hoping that everything is right on one single device from one single manufacturer. The Surface phone, if and when it arrives, will not be the phone for everybody. It will only be suitable for a certain part of the market. But that will be a certain part of the market that's not the same part of the market as the Lumia.
Yeah, I mean, I would add to that. I mean, Lumia goes over quite a broad range, and I expect that to be maintained. But also, there's a reason that Nokia's been one of the dominant phone manufacturers, and that's because it is very good at making phones, and it has years of expertise, research and development dollars and patents, innovations and technology internally, which enables it to build great phones. And I think you can look at the current Lumia 920 and see several areas where it stands out against the competition. Camera being a great example, you know, the imaging experience is something that Nokia's really pushed. That is not something that Microsoft can replicate overnight. There are several components to it. It's, you know, deals with the sensor manufacturers, with Carl Zeiss for the optics, and also software expertise on board. That represents a significant barrier to recreating that technology, which isn't something Microsoft would be able to do overnight. They would probably be able to get something near to kind of, if you like, the standard cameras, the HTC, the Samsung, the Apple, because a lot of those are from off-the-shelf components, and they've got the expertise, some of the expertise on the software side. You can also look at radio engineering and aerial engineering, something that Nokia has a lot of expertise in. It's why they tend to hold reception better than other phones. The tuning of processors and power management, that is there a little bit, but I suspect a lot of that's from Qualcomm, so Microsoft will be able to replicate that. Location's another area to look at. You know, Nokia's giving some of that away, but not everything. So you'd probably have better there. But also just the design process of the phones themselves, the robustness of the Nokia hardware, which I think one of the things that people really like about the device, you know, that ability to drop it and it not break and to be quite eye-catching and distinctive, you know, that doesn't come easily. So I think the kind of the simple answer to this is I don't think Microsoft can create as good a phone as Nokia can, and that's why you buy the Lumia device. There is a second dimension to this, which is how you take it to the market. And, you know, mobile phones are more complex than computers and tablets because of the way they're sold, the distribution chain through which they go through, how they're actually sold in the shops, you know, generally subsidized on a contract. That means you have to do a lot more deals in order to get a distribution chain working. That's something that Microsoft would have difficulty matching. It's a big name, so I think most people would talk to them, but just the scale of that program would be difficult, and you have to be pretty nimble. Nokia has an advantage, obviously, that it has a broad range of products and also mobile phones, so it's kind of an operator can get everything from them. I suspect if a Surface phone came out, it would be available only on a limited number of operators and or SIM-free. So that's not so much a consumer reason to buy, but what that does mean is that consumers will probably continue to have better access to the Lumia devices versus trying to buy a Surface phone for a very significant period of time. So hopefully that provides a little bit of insight into that. Now, I guess we'll very briefly address the last part of this question, Ewan.
As a smartphone manufacturer, where would this leave Nokia or Samsung or HTC or everybody else? I think I've kind of addressed that. I think it will force them to do better. It will, you know, Microsoft would probably tell them in advance, you know, in the same way that, you know, the Surface announcement wasn't really a surprise to all the other partners. They probably knew it was coming up, the HPs and everything of this world. And again, you know, there's already been the trouble, and Stephen Neal has been asked this on the earnings call earlier in this month, that, you know, it would be great for the ecosystem and so on. I would be interested to see how, you know, I'm interested to get my hands on the Surface when you look at the engineering design that's went into that. I'm interested because Microsoft would have a relatively clean piece of paper to start their designs on, you know, and they would know that it would not be a multi-million seller. You know, they'd like it to be, everybody would, but it would remain boutique. You know, it's like the difference between like what Fiat would do to make a little runaround car that's going to sell in its, you know, hundreds of millions to everybody there, and a Ferrari.
Yeah, you know? I take a slightly more negative view here. I mean, Stephen Elop, you're right, said, you know, effectively, it would be good for the ecosystem, but I think he said
that
too.
Well, he won't say that, isn't he? Because he used to work for Microsoft, and he's only went to Nokia to destroy it so Microsoft could buy it and make their own phone. And it's all going to plan.
take off your tinfoil hat, Ewan. But joking aside, I think Nokia will not be pleased if it does happen. I think that's pretty much obvious. You know, they don't need the extra competition internally in the Windows phone space and more generally in smartphones. So I think they'll be going, this is really quite annoying. And does it have an impact on them? Yes, of course it does. Would it be terminal? No, I don't think so. But there'll be all kinds of fascinating debate playing out on this, on the politics of it. You know, why have Microsoft chosen to do this? Is Nokia not doing a good enough job? And actually, I don't think the former of Windows Phone is really down to Nokia as much as it's down to both parties. Windows Phone 8 will be particularly interesting because the hardware is better. I mean, Nokia did the best that they could hardware last time around. They had to essentially get it off the shelf. This time round, it's getting more towards a maybe 75-25 split. You know, 75% they've been able to do, 25% of stuff they might have liked to do they haven't been able to do. And the limitations are still coming from Microsoft. They're not coming from Nokia. So although a lot of people would sort of say Nokia's failed and they haven't produced something good enough, actually I think the limitations are more from the Microsoft end. And I can't see a Surface phone being all that much better. As I said, I actually would have the expectation that it wouldn't be as elegant from a design point of view. That's interesting because that's very subjective, and they've done a great job on the Surface tablet. But imaging, for example, or just the quality of the hardware, the way it all works together, that's where I'd expect them to miss out. But yes, it would put an awful lot of pressure on Nokia. people would be asking, why did you choose to go only Windows Phone? Shouldn't you have done Android as well? And, you know, suddenly the reason to become only Windows Phone starts to go away because, you know, are they as special as they used to be? We don't know the terms of the contract between Microsoft and Nokia, but I don't think it necessarily invalidates the argument that Nokia is the special partner, because a Surface Phone, I don't think Microsoft would ever be able to devote the same attention towards a device portfolio that a dedicated manufacturer will. And I think actually the best example of this is looking at Apple, where I feel they have missed out on a bit of the market. They've never been able to address the mid-tier and the low-end terribly effectively because they've been a single device. Now, they've done that as a very deliberate strategy, but I think the same would apply to Microsoft. And I think, you know, there is a good argument for having this vertically integrated company, you know, devices and services. But I think devices, particularly in the mobile phone market, are going to be so broad that having, if you like, a specialist hardware manufacturer is still going to be required to produce kind of the optimum range of devices. But there's a lot of uncertainty over this. This is kind of a speculative answer. We're going to have to wait and see what happens. I suspect, Ewan, this is a topic we will return to again and again.
Am I right in thinking that I've just done the yay Nokia answer and that you've just done the, oh, hold on now, wait a minute?
Well, we like to switch things up sometimes, don't we, Ewan?
Yeah, let's switch it back. I'm scared now, Ferris. Right. Okay, applications for the week. Let's rattle those through really quickly before we end off this one, because when there's only two of us in the podcast, we can get it over really quickly.
Yeah, except we haven't this time because we've guessed and guessed and guessed. Anyway, yes. Before we go to the hour mark, my app pick for this week is Risk. This is exclusive to Nokia devices. This was one of their arrangements with EA in terms of releasing an Xbox Live title. It's an implementation of the kind of Hasbro or the classic board game where it's all about world domination. Evil laugh. I think it's been quite nicely done. It's available from the Windows Phone Marketplace. You know, you can play single player and you can also play multiplayer, but it's only local multiplayer. There's no kind of integration with online multiplayer, which I think is a missed opportunity. But I've still had fun enjoying playing that one this week. So, yeah, recommended download from me.
Rafe, in all of your years of having smartphones over all the platforms, how often have you played a local multiplayer game?
3 times.
In how many years?
10 years.
Why do people bother? Why do developers bother with local multiplayer? To get the bullet point and nothing else. Really, if you're going to do multiplayer, do it properly. I've got about to go on a rant here, I think. Rafe, should I stop?
Yeah, you should probably stop there, because I agree completely with you. The only exception to that is I do use Pass and Play with friends, so I think that mode's fine. I don't really see the point in having kind of local Wi-Fi. If you're going to do Wi-Fi, make sure it's online, please.
Yeah, there we go. Right then, my pick, also out of Xbox Live, but available for everything. Just to stress, Rafe's Risk is exclusive. It's exclusive to Windows Phone handsets that are running Lumia. Nobody else is getting to play Risk in the rest of the world. That's it. Stop playing. You have to buy Nokia to play. But it's a board game. Shut up. It's just the Xbox. It's just Windows Phone. Carcassonne, which is probably just completely destroyed by my pronunciation. It's based on a town in southern France that just continually got invaded all the time. Carcassonne is a German-style board game, which basically means that it's not competitive. You keep scoring at the very end. Everybody measures himself to see who was the best. Nobody gets eliminated as you go through. This is a fantastic game. It's been out for about 12, 13 years now. One game of the year back at the start of the 21st century. It's between 2 and 5 players, unless you have local multiplayer, but it has online multiplayer as well, as long as some really, really strong computer AI. A wonderfully easy tutorial. It's an easy game to get into. Do grab this as a trial version and have a run through, because it's, you know, there's a bit of luck, there's a bit of strategy. It's not that hard to get into. It's like the old classic of Othello, which is very easy to understand, but to master it takes a bit of time. There will be a full review next week when I stop playing it.
Okay, thank you very much, Ewan. I think that's this week's podcast wrapped up. As we kind of hinted at the beginning, we'll probably try and do a special edition around the launch of Windows Phone 8. That's happening on Monday. I think there'll be plenty more news in the weeks to come about availability of handsets, and we'll be able to start reviewing the Windows Phone 8 handsets. Woohoo!
Yay! It only remains to me to ask you all out there to send your questions in. And they don't just need to be about Windows Phone smartphones. You can ask us about dietary requirements and how to cook turkeys and everything for Christmas. Be interested to see what we get, but really try and stick with the Windows Phone stuff for most of them. The email address, it will be questions that we think Rafe can answer in under 5 minutes at allaboutwindowsphone.com. Rafe, get the server set up for that one. Thank you all out there for listening. Thank you also to Rafe for doubleheading the podcast with me today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Go to the website. Lots going on next week. Twitter streams, Facebook streams, we'll have them as well. Probably a live page going up on one day in the evening GMT time as well. So keep an eye for what, 4 p.m. GMT, are we saying?
I think it's going to be about 5 or 6 p.m. Euron, but keep an eye on the site. We'll have all GMT. The details. Yes, don't forget the clocks go back on Sunday.
That's the one. Yes. www.allaboutwindowsphone.com. I'm Euron Spence.
I'm Rafe Blanford. Download the apps.
And listen to us and enjoy. We'll see you next week. We're just stumbling over the line now. Ta-ra.